I don't care who you are. You go into anyone's history, you're going to find things that you can be sad about and things that you're not proud of.
Right.
Or you can know those things and accept them, but then look for the things that make you proud and then make those the things that you build your foundation on.
Welcome to the Passion Behind the Art Show. It's all about diving in with individuals to learn the awesome story behind their passion. It's your host, Daryl Pinnock. Enjoy this week's episode.
So I'm excited to welcome on the podcast a good friend of mine, Clint Walking Stick. We hit it off at Creative South, and we've just been keeping in touch ever since. Great dude. Just an awesome person to chat with. So I was excited to have him on the podcast.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Darold. I'm going to screw up your name. And okay, first of all, I want to start off by screwing up your name at least five or six times. So by the time someone's listening to this, they'll understand, oh, yeah, this guy obviously doesn't know how to pronounce people's names. So he's not like a smart person at all. And so if I screw that up again, you know, just you can just you know who I am. So it makes sense that I would screw it up. But I'm glad. I'm honored. I'm honored that you had me on your podcast. I'm excited to talk with you a little bit about our design goings on and about how we hit it off at Creative South and what a great thing that is, and walk through your questions. So shoot.
Awesome. How did this journey start for Clint? What age, when did you know that, okay, my superpower is design?
Man, what age? Okay, so let's go way back then. I'm a huge Batman fan and have been since I was a very small kid. The first things I learned how to draw were Batman, the Batmobile, cool villains, Joker, cool stuff. And so I've always been into comic books and Batman. So even like in kindergarten, first grade, on up through grade school, I was always known as the kid who could like draw things. So whenever there was a class art project that would come along, it was always, hey, Clint, come draw this thing and we'll have the rest of the class color it in or something like that. And so that kind of got me started. I come from kind of a fine art family. I've got an aunt who's technically a great aunt, but she's always just been an aunt. My grandfather's sister, who is a tenured professor at Cornell University for fine arts. And my grandfather is also a Cherokee fine artist and has been his whole career. I didn't find out that he was a graphic designer his whole career until I was in college.
Wow.
So he was practicing graphic design back in the late 40s, all through the 50s, and then through the 60s. And the day that his job said, hey, we're going to learn how to use computers, he's like, that's it. I retire. So he retired. I'm not kidding. He retired the day that they rolled computers into the office. So this was the mid-70s is when, or late 70s, when computers just started kind of getting, getting used in graphic design. And so I didn't know he was a designer until, okay, so let's press pause on me not knowing that my grandfather was a graphic designer. So Clint, the little kid who could draw, went to college. And when I was a sophomore in college, I just made a list of things that I loved and things that I wanted to do, and decided that the only thing that I liked enough to turn into a job was drawing somehow. So I decided that advertising was going to be, you know, something that I was interested in. At the time, my major in college, get this, was psychology and creative writing. Yeah. No, you can laugh. You can laugh. You can totally laugh. It doesn't hurt my feelings.
The psychology, yes. The creative writing, I could see how you could use that, but the psychology.
Sure. No, and I still have a love for psychology. A lot of the books that I read and run through, I mean, I've always been interested in the overlap between behavioral psychology and graphic design and how those two things interact and how those two things work together to make something happen. You're nodding your head yes, so that means you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, yes. Don't want to interrupt you, that's why, but
no,
yes. Especially
no,
when it comes to selling, and yes, 100%.
So that's the connection that I liked about psychology. I just didn't know it yet.
Right.
So I'm taking, in creative writing, I'm in the journalism department at school, and I'm taking a class, and they're showing us a video, a VHS. They pop in a VHS video. Yes,
what's
I'm that.
That?
And so it's about an advertising agency, and it rolls through the different functions of the different people that work at an agency. Well, they got to the creative director. And it's this guy with long hair, with cool sneakers, with like Legos on his desk and pictures of his kids that his kids drew behind him. And I was like, I want that job. That guy looks like he does something I want to get into. So at the end of class, I talk to my professor and I'm like, how do you get to do that guy's job? And so he kind of turns me around and says, the building across the street is the art building. And in that building, there's a design hall and you need to go there and talk to one of the professors over there. So I did. And I left the building, and that day changed my major to graphic design with a minor in advertising. And so I started heavy-hitting graphic design classes in the college. And so I was having dinner with, you know, my parents and my sister. I think it was like my grandfather's birthday or something like that. And this is at one of those restaurants where they have, like, the butcher paper on the table, and they give you crayons, and you can draw on the table, that kind of thing. When that was big, like in the – I guess that was in the late 90s or early aughts. And so I'm sitting here drawing some letters, some letter forms, some characters. And he leans over and he's like, hey, put a right drop shadow on that. And I was like, yeah, okay. So I'm sitting here doing that. And I'm like, wait a minute. How do you know what that is? You're the only person. So it came out. He came out as a graphic designer. Back then they called it commercial art.
Right.
Which, you know, art in the service of commerce, which I kind of makes sense.
Yep.
So I learned that I am doing the same profession that he's been doing, just in a totally different era and decade.
Right.
And so, I got a lot of fine artists in the family. My grandfather was a commercial artist. My dad worked as an undergraded draftsman for GTE, which is now Verizon. But he had a big drafting table and cool pencils and stencils, and he would do fun stuff. This is all by hand. This is drafting not done on a computer. Technical drafting, which he learned from the military. But yeah, there's always been a desk and pencils in my family. So that's just kind of, I guess, part of being a walking stick out here in Oklahoma. But yeah, so that's how I fell into it. And luckily, you said, I'm going to move on. Okay, go ahead and ask me question number two.
No, go ahead, man. Because I was just going to interject the drafting part, because that was my thing before I even touched graphic design. Architecture, learning by the school I went to, the college that I went to was a technical college, so it was geared to straight to drafting and everything architectural and construction, and we did it all by hand before we even touched the computer. So that's like a skill I will probably never lose.
It's a good skill to have, especially if you're – I've been seeing your type studies, and I'm digging those. Man, keep doing those. Those are awesome. Keep doing it. It's the only way you make it into something, and you've rocked it. So, man, that's exciting. Keep doing it. But, yeah, having a pencil in your hand, the more comfortable you are with that, the better I think it informs your design process and your ability to think – with a pencil and a piece of paper in your hand, and the better that you can translate that to a computer screen.
Awesome.
I think it was there's like a Saul Bass quote, or gosh, was it Saul Bass? I probably screwed that up. There's a video of him on YouTube, and this design student, this is taken in the 80s, is like, well, what can I do to be a better designer? And he stops and he looks at the camera and he goes, learn to draw. And I'm like, yeah, that's some wisdom right there. I mean, because without that skill, it makes this job that we do just that much more difficult. And
very
so
true.
You don't need anything that makes it even more difficult. So do yourself a favor, learn to draw, and you should be good. So shoot with question number two. I'm ready.
All right. So people, support system, who would you say kept Clint going even though it was hard? Who you drawed energy from when you were down and out?
Let's see. So let's start back in school. So that would be my parents. Luckily, I've come from kind of a family who kind of already knows what design is and what design can do. And so I never had to have that discussion of trying to explain design to your mom or dad, you know, so they don't worry about you. Art has always been something that's kind of been the normal in my family, which I'm fortunate for that. So my family, both my parents, my grandparents, they fully understood what I was doing in school and supported me taking that educational tract, because they knew that, yeah, if you learn to draw, then you're only going to go hungry if you want to, because, man, you go out in the real world, people that can draw, it's like you're David Copperfield. It's like you're a magician. You take a blank piece of paper and a Sharpie and you make magic happen, man. It's great. So that was good to have their support. I married the best woman in the world, who is not a creative in a visual sense. She's a concert trained pianist, graduated summa cum laude from our university, highest grade point average in her graduating class. I graduated, thank the Lord, you know, kind of thing. But see, I'm also a musician. I play guitar, and I have since I was like 11. And so we connected.
What?
Yeah, I know.
I should have had you play on at the end of the show, man.
Well, don't make me pull out a guitar. I will do it, Daryl Pinnick. I will pull out a guitar. Which one of the six ones should I get out of my closet? I'm one of those. Yeah, and also play the bass if I'm feeling bassy. But yeah, no, I'm a huge guitar fan. And so we connected through music. And so it's nice to be married to another creative person, but a different type of creativity, where one is music. And that way I can kind of separate the visual side of what I do with the musical side of what I do. And it's just it's a perfect, wait for it, wait for the dad pun, it's a perfect marriage of the two art forms. I did it. And they listened to it, and now they're puking. And I'm sorry for that, listeners, dear listeners. Don't puke for the dad jokes. I've got two boys. The dad jokes are going to happen.
Awesome, man. So I heard earlier you said something about Cherokee, because you don't look Cherokee.
Nope.
At
nope.
All.
I tell people that I'm a Cherokee who's cleverly disguised as a hairy Scotsman. It's true. And I'm more Cherokee than I am anything else, which is weird, because my sister looks like she's a Cherokee. My dad and his sisters all look, you know, Native American. My grandfather, of course. But I just got enough of that white boy goo, I guess, that made me come out looking like a glow in the dark Scotsman, which is okay. It always gets a double take when I tell people the name, because they think I'm, you know, they think I'm screwing with them. And I'm telling you, I'm like, no, it's not a joke. It really is my name. It's I was born with it. It's not a joke. And so, but yeah, no, I'm a Cherokee, and this is what we look like. So beware.
And I like this. I like the fact that how much you intertwine that heritage in your designs, because you can see it. And I mean, you don't have to. You could get by without doing it. So it's kind of cool that you kind of do that from time to time.
I appreciate that. It's important to me. I think kind of knowing what makes you and where you're from and your own family history. You know, I think there's so much power that can, especially as a creative, that can be had from which to draw your creativity from, just by pausing and, you know, having these conversations about, you know, talking to your parents about who are you, where are we from, what do we know, what do we do, and really taking a good firm grip on kind of your history and make it something that you're proud of,
right?
Good or bad, because there's, I mean, you go into anyone's history, I don't care who you are, you go into anyone's history, you're going to find things you can be sad about and things that you're not proud of.
Right.
Or you can know those things and accept them, but then look for the things that make you proud, and then make those the things that you build your foundation on as a creative. And I think that's something that, you know, I wish more creatives would take the time to discover about themselves.
Yeah.
Again, because I think it's a very rich well to draw from, and a good platform to build creativity from.
Yeah, and it kind of centers a lot of your inspiration too.
It's true. It gives you a good starting off place. And so you're right. I've made that something that I don't hide. It didn't used to be popular to be a Native American, especially you go back 50 years, it wasn't very popular at all. And so I've kind of turned it into something that I am proud of and try to work into the things that I create simply because it's who I am. I can't hide that. And I'm not gonna, if I've got my say about it. So there you go.
So during this journey, I mean, you're a happy dude. You've got a lot of life. What would you say was the biggest struggle you had to overcome?
Ooh.
I mean, in your journey overall.
Right. Two things. And you won't believe me when I tell you, but that's what I'm telling you. First thing is I used to be incredibly, incredibly shy and withdrawn. Whenever I'd walk into a room where I didn't know people, I was always the kid who I didn't want to be there. It would make me, I just would want to hide in the back. I don't want to talk to anybody. I don't want to have to do anything. And in my own research, again, psychology, in reading enough books and reading enough studies about how to take not being an extrovert, or being an introvert, and how to operate in an extroverted world. And what I've come to understand about myself is that I am what the scholars call an ambivert, which is I draw my energy from being from solitude, from being alone in my little 10x10 office. I start my mornings off the same way, just, you know, prayer and reading and just being quiet. And I mean, I work in solitude. I work in my office. I don't have a team. I mean, it's all digital. All my teams or people I work with are through a screen, of course. Right. I work in solitude. I draw my energy from being in solitude. And that's something that energizes me. But through my reading and through just kind of self-discovery, there's some mind tricks, you could call them,
right,
that have helped me be an extrovert when I need to be and continue to draw my energy from my introversion. And there's a very, very cool study that was done that said that if you tell yourself, whenever you feel nervous, if you're an introvert and you have to go to a place where there's people and they want to talk, or you have to perform on a stage, or you have to give a talk to someone, a group of people, and that nervousness you feel in your heart and in your stomach that won't rest, if you tell yourself that you're not scared but that you're excited, then mentally it completely shifts your energy.
Really?
To the butterflies you feel, instead of saying I feel nervous and I feel, you know, like I feel scared, but if you say no, I don't feel scared, I feel excited, I feel like this is gonna be a good thing, because what was discovered in this study is that the brain cannot tell the difference between the feeling of excitement and the feeling of nervousness.
Wow.
And so it's a simple mind shift of saying, no, I'm not nervous, I'm excited. And so to make the first thing you do when you have to be in front of people, say, yeah, I'm excited to be here. And the more you say that, the more you'll start to believe it, and the more fun you'll have. Because, you know, it's a game. Talk to people. People, they're talk to strangers. They're not going to bite unless you ask them to.
Right.
please don't ask them to, and you'll have friends. See, that's how you do it.
Yeah, I don't think you want to do that.
No, not at all. No, especially the crowds I hang out in. I mean, that's just not cool. You don't want to go there and you'll come back with a bloody nub. That's not cool. No, but the second you asked about things I had to overcome, the second thing is I still deal with self-doubt. Mm. Even today, even wow. Now. And it's just one of those little things in my head that keep me from, I feel like, doing the best work I can do. And I think every creative on some level deals with self-doubt, especially if you're a performer or if you're I don't, anyone that has to be in front of people. If you're a speaker, I'm sure it's the same. I'm not a speaker, but I'm sure it's the same with them, that there's some part of their head that says, hey, you're making all this up. You're no good. You're going to fail. You're going to fall. And it's called like – what's it called? Like poser syndrome or imposter syndrome?
It's right. called imposter yes, syndrome. Imposter syndrome.
You may have heard that phrase before, yes. And I'm glad you have, because I don't know how to explain it other than the fact that it's just that little demon that lives in your head that tells you you're not good enough.
Yeah, it's basically something in your head telling you that you're not what you're trying to be, or you're putting on a front. Someone's going to find you out that you're not exactly what you're portraying yourself to be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I deal with that. And so I read another book. there's a great book, what's it called? Called Learned Optimism by Dr. Seligman. He's a psychologist and teacher at a major university. It's called Learned Optimism. And he has a method he calls the ABCDE method. I'm not going to explain it. I'm just going to do the flyover. Basically, the method is every negative voice that you have, every phrase that negative voice throws out, write it down, and then you become a lawyer. You become an attorney. You come up with all the reasons why that thing you wrote down is not true.
Mm.
And you start telling yourself the things that you wrote down to refute what the negative voice told you.
Wow.
And it helps, and it really helps you grasp, it helps you grasp a more realistic picture of your abilities and your resources and your feelings and your moods. And it's just a wonderful tool to be able to use. Go check out that book. I'm sure he's lectured somewhere, but, Learned Optimism. It helps me and continues to help me, quiet those voices and let me do the work I know that I'm geared to do. You know, the work that I know that I've been put on the planet to do. And it helps me just kind of barrel through them and get some things done. So, introvert and self-doubt, but I've been working on both of those, and I feel like I'm in a good place with them for right now. But those are definitely the two.
All right, so let's talk a little about this debt-free living.
No, you didn't bring that up. Okay, ask me what you want to know.
Let's talk a little bit about this debt-free living. Are you already on the journey? Are you already debt-free? Are you on the journey? What's your thought process about debt? Let's talk a little about that. Just share.
Man, you opened up the wrong door, Gerald. So I will tell you the truth, that back in 2007, my wife and I took a class called Financial Peace University, that's put on by a guy named Dave Ramsey. Basically, you sit in the class and watch videos and one through a workbook, and it fully and completely changed our perspective on money and how it's used to align yourself with things that are actually smart, not what the culture tells you is smart. And it really aligned our minds and hearts when it comes to things like giving and things like preparing for our future. So way back in 2007, luckily my wife and I did not have any school debt when we graduated. So immediately we were we're on a good track, but we were married. So, I mean, I bought a house, so we have a mortgage, and we had recently bought a vehicle that we still have. After going through that class and learning how to use money well and learning why debt is not a tool that helps really anybody except for banks, a couple months after that, we paid off the car, and we haven't had any debt since. And in 2016, we paid off our mortgage.
Mm.
So for a piano teacher and an independent graphic designer that make not a whole lot of money, to be able to do something like that lets us know that, man, there's really nothing in our way now. I mean, So we've paid off our mortgage. We are 100% fully debt free. And that's the only way I suggest trying to operate a business like this on your own. I'll tell you this, during our journey, during the whole time, I was employed for about 5.5 of those years. And my wife has worked for herself since college, and just does an incredible job with her teaching. And so by the time I wanted to go independent, she was like, yeah, you're ready. Let's do this. I mean, we have plenty of, by then we were completely debt free except for the mortgage, and we had plenty of money saved in our emergency fund. So we had well over 6 months worth of cash in the bank just in case something bad happened. And so she was like, yeah, go in tomorrow and tell your boss, you know, that you're giving him his 2 weeks. And I did. I went in, I gave him a month because he's still the best boss I've ever had. I walked into fire for that guy. His name is Rob Miller, in case you want to know. But so I left a job on great terms. There's still a client. Just a wonderful job that helped prepare me for what I'm doing now. Oh. And so, in 2016, paid off the mortgage, 100% debt free. We went on a 11 year anniversary, wedding anniversary, went to Maui for a week, paid in cash. It's great. I highly suggest it. Hawaii smells like flowers. You gotta go. So ask me another question. That's kind of my journey start to finish about becoming debt free and about what debt is. I feel like you have more questions, so throw more at me.
Well, I mean, I kind of wanted to dive into that a little bit because we are on that journey right now. Good. Read a Good. Book on Rich Dad Poor Dad.
It's an excellent book.
And everything changed for me after that.
Good.
So we've cleared off quite a few 5 figures worth of debt.
Good.
And we're working on another one this year. And after that, then it's the mortgage. But I was just intrigued about that because I feel like we've been taught this thing about what we should do and how we should spend our money. And it actually, if you really think about it, really doesn't make any sense.
Who taught you those things? Broke people and banks. That's who taught you those things.
Especially the banks.
Oh, man.
So, you know, I've just been a firm believer of, like, if you can't buy it with cash, that means you can't really afford it.
And that is the truth. And the stronger you adhere to that, the better off you're going to be. So you said that you've also gone through Financial Peace University, or that you're going through it?
No, actually, I didn't. Actually, I've just been two things: the book "Rich Dad Poor Dad" and this podcast that I listen to on a regular basis. It's called
Which one?
Mad Scientist.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
So he basically interviews a lot of people that's financially independent. So we've been kind of taken from that and just been on this journey. So, and I mean, the crazy part is we were never like crazy spenders. Like my wife is like, she's perfect at stuff like that. She's perfect. But even then we still saw ways how to spend our money more wisely. So can you imagine a person that's not spending their money wisely? So yeah, it's just been a epic journey, man.
Well, if I have a spare copy, I'll send you one. If not, find the book The Total Money Makeover by Dave Ramsey. Okay. Pick you up a copy. Read that. It's like a third grade reading level. You can read it in an hour.
I think my wife rented it from the library and wrote some notes down.
Get you a physical copy and mark it up and read that. That is exactly how – that's the plan my wife and I used to get to where we are today. And it's only crazy if you don't want to breathe free air. How about that? My Total Money Makeover by Dave Ramsey is where we started. And I cannot suggest his class enough, Financial Peace University. If you're connected to a church or any civic group in your area, go up and look for an FPU class. It's $100, but you will get thousands of dollars worth of information. for you to be able to completely retool the money end of what you're doing and set you up to win in a way you've never experienced. So I wish I was a salesperson. I wish I got a cut. I don't. What I'm saying, though, is if you're listening to this and you know, you've got debt payments coming out your ears, man, I'm telling you, there's a better way to live, and Daryl is proof.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, we have two vehicles, and we have no car payments, and we're working on the student loan now, and then the next is the mortgage.
Good, good. Keep it up, man. That sounds great.
Yeah, so it's an awesome journey. So when I saw that on your site that you're, I was like, I'm my kind of people right there. That's my kind of people.
I'm sorry I'm your kind of people, because you are in a group of weirdos now. You don't even know.
It's crazy, though, because I think because we are immersed in it, I try to tell my wife that, dear, everybody is not doing this. Because when you're – one thing I've learned, when you're kind of in an area and you're researching it, you kind of start thinking that it's starting to become the norm, but it actually isn't. And every time we talk to other people, they're like, you did what? Like, literally, 2016, we just went dry turkey. Like, we didn't do nothing. Nothing. No vacation, yeah. nothing. And that set us up, you know, for a good bang starting in 17. So, yeah, it's an epic journey, and I think that's the journey for us.
Cool. Well, there's another tool that I want to give you. It's an app that you and your wife can share on your phone. It's absolutely free. Just sign up for an account, and it's free, but it's called Every Dollar. It's called the Every Dollar app. It's on Apple iTunes. It's also on Android. It will tell you where your money is going, and it will help you put your money in the right places so that good things happen and good things get done. So check that out, too, everydollar.com. And it'll show you the app to download, and it just makes perfect sense when it comes to dealing with your finances.
Awesome. So what's coming in the horizon for Clint? What's next?
God, I've got so many things happening next. I mean, it's kind of crazy. So I briefly told you about the sketchbook when we had pizza in Atlanta, right? So I've manufactured a sketchbook that I wanted, because I looked around, I couldn't find a sketchbook that had the features I liked and had what I wanted at a price I wanted. And so I kind of had, you know, a little self-discovery moment where I was like, well, what would it take to just manufacture one and make it available to people? Because there's got to be some other lunatic out there that likes the things the thinking that I put into the sketchbook. And so if you go to thebestsketchbook.com, all one long URL, you can get a good look at the sketchbook that I manufactured and produced. And right now I'm working on version 2.0 of that sketchbook, which will have a couple different features. It'll have a non-photo blue dot grid, which means if you take a picture of it or put it in the scanner, the dots will disappear. You're just left with the black and white on the page, and it's a beautiful way for illustrators to work. It keeps your work nice and organized. And just a couple thicker, you know, front and back. But other than that, it's basically the same one with a little bit of space so you can fit an 8.5 by 11 folded in the front pocket. Mm. There's just some great features on it. Go check it out if you're a person that uses pencil and paper still, which I highly recommend. That's the one thing I'm doing. Gosh, what else am I doing? I'm working with two buddies, and we're releasing a comic book in a couple weeks.
Nice.
I did the logo, and I did all the lettering and lettering layout, and we're making like fake advertisements for it. Another buddy of mine did all the writing, and another friend of mine did all the illustration. And it's called Discount Force. And the storyline is basically all of the toys at the dollar store team up to fight crime and to fight monsters, because they're all like janky, but they don't know it. And so they're like you know how like there's like the A team and the B team and the C team. Yeah. They're like the F team. They're like the screw ups. And so, yeah, it's the dollar store toys team up to battle monsters, and it's a fun book. It's coming out. We're going to debut it at Wizard World here in Oklahoma City and have a booth and everything, and it's going to be a big thing, and I'm super excited about the results of it, and I'm looking forward to for it to roll out.
Awesome. That sounds epic, man. That sounds epic.
I'll definitely send you some images.
Yeah, I mean, I've done a couple illustration projects. I really don't post that. Most of the times when I do stuff like that, it's kind of like confidentiality. So there's not much to share. So, but I could tell you those projects are intense and it's a lot of work.
It's a ton of work, but yeah. it's rewarding because it's something tangible you can hold in your hand and show people that you actually poured some heart and soul into and have them flip through it. Even if they don't like it, they can at least know that, yeah, here's something that you made that's this tangible that you can look through. And I don't know, that's just a neat experience to be able to see people's faces when they read the jokes and they look at the pictures, and it's something that you put your heart into, and it's just a great experience.
Awesome, man. So Oklahoma City, you know, I'm kind of upset, right?
Oh no, what happened? Yeah, we got someone, didn't we?
I'm a little upset.
I had nothing to do with it.
I'm a little upset, but I'm also happy because I'm pulling for him. I'm pulling for Melo.
Yeah. We'll see what he does here. We're excited about having him. I'm kind of still impressed with Oklahoma City's ability to kind of get to where they've gone and as fast as they've gotten there. But we'll see what happens with him. I'm excited about kind of the new lockup team wise, and so we'll definitely see what happens. We'll be following that, but for sure, yeah.
All right. So, what advice would you like to give creatives? And the fact that you're a musician, and I'm not sure if you noticed, but I also interview musicians on the podcast. Yeah. That's kind of how it started, because that's kind of like my hidden passion.
Hidden secret?
My hidden secret. I actually sing, but that's how the podcast started. So what advice would you give to creatives?
Well, all of my advice really kind of is skewed toward visual creatives, graphic designers, that kind of group. And, there's a couple of phrases that have kind of come to me and popped in my head throughout my career. The first one is hard work is the minimum requirement. And that's just something I tell myself when the going gets tough. I remember being in school and someone would roll in or a kid would roll in and they would always ask the teacher, hey, what's the minimum requirement for this class? You know, what's the least amount of work I can do possible and still get a passing grade, you know? And so that's just the backwards mentality when it comes to being the guy that calls the shots and who has to drive yourself to be creative and do creative things. And so, you know, hard work is the minimum requirement. It's just something that I chant to myself whenever it's tough getting up to go work out or it's, I'm facing a client issue or it's a job issue. So I keep that in mind. And, there's a couple things. I'm going to try to read through them. I wrote an acronym, but now I can't decipher it. And I'm going to remember what it is long after our interview is over. Because that's just the kind of guy I am, Daryl. So my mom always told me another thing that I keep in mind is that smart is something you do, not something you know. And back to our finance discussion, it kind of plays into that, and it kind of plays into not feeling bad that you don't have a bunch of accolades and awards and a wall of degrees behind you, because smart things are things that – I also say that smart is a verb. If your actions are smart, the things you think, do, and say, if those are smart, then good things are going to happen. You can have a lot of – you can have a lot of learning and education and things like that. But the more you can put smart, the idea of being smart, into practice in your day-to-day, then the better off your tangent of life or career or whatever you want to call it will be. So, smart is something you do, not something you know. That's another huge one. So there's a couple more that I think are also important. in doing all this study from reading these psychology books and learning about your habits and learning about how to use your habits in a positive way, Sean Acher has two books on positivity and happiness and how that interacts with your habits. Charles Jung, I've mispronounced his name too, wrote a book called Habits.
I heard about that book. Habits.
It's a big book, but man, check it out. He talks about something called the habit loop, and it makes you aware of the things that you think and do when you're not thinking. Your habits, the things that you just naturally find yourself doing. And so I came up with a phrase that I tell myself and use when I'm talking to students, and it's simply to design your default. To be aware of your default actions and thoughts, and to put intent behind them, and do things intentionally instead of by default, so that you get the results that you're wanting, no matter what they are, whether it's a weight loss goal, a financial goal, a business goal. If you can be aware of your habits, because you've got good habits and you've got bad habits, and those bad habits are strangling you and keeping you away from hitting those goals. Simply being aware of them is step one, because once you're aware of them, you can educate yourself on how to use them and kind of do a jiu-jitsu move and use their power and get them to where you want to go. So design your default, and that leads me into the next one, which you already have the sticker, and I call it slay your day. And what that basically is to make sure that the moment you wake up and get into work, whatever your work is, to know what you're doing and to just, you know, kill it every day. The way I do that is I don't put my head down to go to sleep without writing down the top three things that I need to get done that next day. So the trick is write down the three things you need to do that next day that you need to either take care of or that are going to edge you closer to your goal. But the rule is you have to be able to do those three things within a 8-hour workday or a 10-hour workday or whatever your workday looks like. So If you have blocked off 8 hours, you've got to make sure those three things are things that you can get done that day. And don't go to sleep until you've written those things down. That way, you wake up, you get in the office, you look at your list, and you've got to knock out those three things. And so that habit over time will get you closer to your goals and get you closer to where you want to be. The third and last idea that I talk about is I call it I just say get caught. And what I mean by that is get caught doing the things you love in front of the people that respond to that thing. So if you're a musician and you play a certain kind of music and it's your desire and passion to do that kind of music, get caught doing that kind of music in front of the people that will respond to it the best. Because my idea is that I want to produce such a body of work that by the time the right clients find me, they're going to wonder where I've been their entire life. So it won't have to be a position where I'm having to sell what I do to them. If I do enough of what I'm geared to do and move myself closer to doing it in front of the people that will respond to it best, then it's only a matter of time before they're like, whatever you're doing, we've got to hire you because you're killing it and we want whatever you've got. So, I mean, that takes a couple of steps, a couple of things. You've got to know kind of who your client is or who your ideal customer or client is and decide that. You've got to find out who you are and what you're geared to do and how you're geared to do it. You've got to decide out of those things, you know, what you love and what you're on fire for. Because enthusiasm is something that people are drawn toward. And especially let's talk about design and about sales for a moment. I've heard sales being described as a simple transfer of enthusiasm. So if you can pour enthusiasm into your work, into what you're doing, you don't have to sell anybody on anything. the right people are going to respond to that enthusiasm in a way where a transfer happens. And so it's just value for value that you're exchanging. And yeah, by the time the right people find you, they're going to wonder where you've been this whole time. And the right relationships will present themselves. And it's putting yourself in that position to be caught is the idea. So, you know, design your default, slay your day, and go get caught.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Where can people go learn about what Mr. Walking Stick is doing?
Well, there's going to be way too many URLs on the show notes. I'm going to tell you that. You can find, just scratching the surface of who I am and the work I do at my website. It's just walkingstickdesign.com, all one word. You can find me on Twitter, making dad jokes and awful puns on Twitter, and that's at walkingstick_co. I'm on Instagram if you want to see fresh work. I'm always posting stuff on Instagram, and that's as the same as Twitter. It's at walkingstick_co. I'm on Dribbble, same name. I'm on, believe it or not, I post interesting businessy idea stuff on LinkedIn. I know, LinkedIn, right? Who knew? I thought it died, but no, LinkedIn's still around. It's still kicking. And so I post interesting things there as well. So just type in Clint Walking Stick, and you never know what you get. Just don't laugh at the bad stuff, and come find me on the good stuff.
Well, Clint, I really appreciate you, man. Always awesome talking to you. I'm glad to have you on the show. I can't wait to share this episode. Thanks again for coming on, man. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm honored, Daryl. And anytime you want to talk again, just let me know.
Awesome.
All right.
You can always connect with me at DP Creates on Instagram or Twitter. If you ever want to have a conversation, ask a question, that's DP Creates at Instagram or Twitter. Thank you for listening to this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I would love to get your feedback, so please leave a review on iTunes and keep sharing the podcast on social media. Be blessed.